bukan cuma sarjana, tapi profesor. Dia ahli kimia dan fisika. Ya, dan saat ini John Holmes itu adalah presiden dari Apologetics Research of Society. Jadi kenapa kita kepingin untuk yang mengajarkan kita ini adalah ilmu yang dipakai oleh Tuhan di seluruh dunia untuk bisa membantu orang-orang menghubungkan antara sains dengan Bible. Bukan cuma dari sisi pengetahuan, tapi juga dari sisi bagaimana bisa membuat Alkitab itu sangat menarik. Ya. Nah, saya ingin belajar kita semua ini ketika di sini. Kenapa kita akan belajar? Karena untuk mempertimbangkan kita supaya kita bisa berdialog dengan Tuhan, supaya kita bisa melihat Alkitab satu hal yang menarik sehingga kita mau dalam bersama-sama. Boleh ya? Nah,
thanks.
Tanpa menunggu waktu, saya mau minta welcome saudara Ken Jomong dengan luar biasa.
Are you going to be standing here?
Yeah, somewhere around here.
Okay, I'm going to listen. One mic.
Yeah, I'm the one who needs to move around more than you. Yeah. Okay. Okay, I have no idea what he said about me. I hope it was nice. I hope it was true. I'm really glad to be with you here today. I guess the conference has to do with getting connected, yes? So I was asked to talk about getting connected with God. So the title of my little talk here is Knowing God. The Christian Adventure. Now let me tell you my outline. First I'm going to spend a few minutes telling you about my story. Then I'm going to talk about my experience of how to get to know God. And the idea that I want you to think of your relationship with God as being like an adventure. And then we'll do questions and answers. I hope the interaction part will be the biggest part of their time. Because I want to hear from you and hopefully give you some perspective. So let me give you the 3-minute version of my story. I'm the one right there. It looks like he's about to make a lot of trouble. My brother and I were so bad that my mother hired a babysitter so she could take a shower. But I grew up going to church. It was a traditional church, like a denomination. I was the guy who carried the cross around and wore the funny looking robe. I was even the president of the church youth group. But there was one little problem. I didn't believe in God. That was kind of a troublemaker in high school. So I went off to college. I was so proud to be an atheist. I remember the first semester I took a class on philosophy. And we studied about Nietzsche. Maybe you've heard of Friedrich Nietzsche. He said, God is dead. I said, yeah, that's right. Now, actually, now I think Nietzsche is dead. And God is doing okay. But then, about my junior year in college, because I was studying chemistry and physics, I realized there's a God. When I studied about science and how everything works, I realized there's a God. So I decided I better worship that God. The problem is I had no idea which God. So my first thought was Hinduism. So I thought I would study Hinduism. And I became a vegetarian. And I did meditation and those kinds of things. And then I thought maybe Buddhism would be good. And I got into mysticism and these kinds of things. But then I went off to graduate school. Graduate school, you know, get a PhD. And I bumped into a church like this one that we have here. And then in 1978, I was baptized. That's me right there. With hair. We took a bike ride over 4,000 meters. So I've been a Christian for 36 years. And let me tell you this. I am more excited about being a Christian than I was when I was a baby Christian. So I want to just spend just a few minutes challenging for you to think about your relationship with God. Point number one. You need to love God with all your mind. You know, pretty famous passage. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. But I want to talk about loving God with our mind. Some people have a quiet time every day. But think about it this way. What if you ate the exact same thing for breakfast for 25 years in a row? Would you be excited about your breakfast? You'd be bored with your breakfast. I think a relationship with God is like that. Some people, they read their Bible. Say, I don't know, what am I going to read today? Jeremiah 47, I guess. Blah, 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 blah. Okay, that's my quiet time. You know, that's not an exciting relationship with God. You know, I have a hard job. I work 50 or so hours a week. In my job, I have to think a lot. Teaching all those college students. And it's tempting when it's time to study the scriptures. You know, don't think too hard. You know what? We need to take it deeper. In Hebrews chapter 5, we don't need to read it. Okay. In Hebrews chapter 5, he talks about, he says, you guys have been around for a while. I'll just quote it. You know, I'll paraphrase. Close enough.
Okay.
Says you guys have been around for a while. By now you should know the scriptures. But some of you need milk instead of solid food. So where are you going to get the solid food in your relationship with God? Let me tell you the secret. Hard work.
Kerja keras.
And a deep commitment.
Dan komitmen yang sangat dalam.
Some people ask me, how did you learn so much in the Bible? It's because I study it. I don't just read it. When I read the scriptures, what does that mean? How does that apply to my life? Then I want to teach it to somebody else. And then I'll get a book that explains the scriptures. But I don't believe it just because that book says it. And then I think about other passages. And I look up the meaning of the word, maybe in Greek or Hebrew. Let's say you wanted to be a great athlete. This is how you're going to prepare. 5 minutes of exercise. Do you want a boring Christian life? I don't want a boring Christian life. I'm guessing probably none of you are married. Any of you married yet? Any of you married yet?
No.
Oh, you are, really? No. Do you have somebody in mind? Maybe the person you're sitting next to? Oh, she's your friend. Well, my wife is my friend. Okay, just kidding. But you know, a relationship with God is a little bit like a marriage. Can marriage ever get boring? Oh yeah, it can get boring. Because you fall into a routine. And you take each other for granted. So I want you, if you're willing to make a decision with me that when you're a Christian, you're going to love God with all your mind. You're going to contemplate God. You're going to think deeply about God. You're not going to believe it just because the preacher says it. You're going to say to him, show me that in the Bible. Do it humbly. Do it with humility. But I tell you, I use my mind. I worship God with my mind. Point number two. Have the attitude that David had. David was a man after God's own heart, wasn't he? Now, I'll be honest with you. I can relate more to Solomon. Then I can relate to David. Because Solomon was a smart guy. He was like a scientist.
seorang saintis.
But David had a heart.
Tapi dikatakan Daud mempunyai.
He had an emotional relationship with God. I like some of the things that David said. He had an amazing relationship with God. Anybody who knew David said, that guy is close to God. He's connected. What's the title of the conference? Not connected. He linked. Yeah. He's linked. He has God on Facebook or something like that. I don't know. Here's one verse I like. David said, verse
72.
We could use the analogy of a marriage. What if the husband says to the wife, you are more precious to me than thousands of pieces of gold or silver. My wife is not even looking at me right now. You know, that's a great relationship. If you want to have an exciting relationship with God, I suggest you be like David. He valued the scriptures highly. He would not just pay attention to the movies or the thing that's online or the sports that people are playing. He said, the best part of my day is when I get to read the scriptures. And when I get to go to talk to God.
Now,
verse 53 is another one. Does it upset you when people don't believe in God? Does it upset when you when people say, ah, yeah, Christianity, yeah, whatever. Or when people say things about the Bible that aren't true? That stuff makes me mad. It should get you upset. I want people to know the truth. I want to know the truth. I like verse 136.
Air mataku berbinar seperti aliran air, karena orang tidak berpegang pada Allah.
David was emotional about his relationship with God. This is about loving God with all your heart, not just all your mind. Is it hard to give your heart to God? I think sometimes it is. Because you can't see God. It's hard to give your heart to someone you can't see. But for myself, I want to fall in love with God. And David did that. He gave his heart to God. I like verse 139 also. David had zeal about the Bible. It's like he got excited about it. I'm going to teach about the book of Revelation tomorrow for the church. And I tell you, I am fired up about it. And I am so lucky,
because
then on Monday I get to teach about the book of Ezekiel. I love that book. I mean, it's helped me to understand God. The connections between Ezekiel and Zechariah and Jeremiah. And how Revelation and Ezekiel kind of are saying the same thing. How it talks about the restoration of Israel to the promised land. That's more exciting than what's that new Jurassic movie? I don't know. What is that? Is there? Yeah, something like that. What's it called? Jurassic 14 or something like that? Jurassic Park. Okay, good. Now, my point number three, that's my main point. I want you to have a sense, to have a feeling, an idea of the Christian adventure. How many of you like adventure? I love adventure. I love adventure a lot, actually. And it gets me in trouble a lot, actually, too. I'm glad my wife wasn't there when I went on that one. Because, you know, I'm 60 years old. And a couple months ago, I went down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon and back in one day. And I beat some of those college students. To me, Christianity is an adventure. I'm just dreaming about the next thing. Today, Jen and I were talking with Harlem. He says, we're starting to work with the church in Thailand. I said, can I go? I want to go to Thailand. I want to help the church there. Christianity is a big adventure. We have to have a sense of expectation. You know, I've been reading the Bible for about 36, 37 years. I've learned more in the last 2 years than any other 2 years. And I'm telling you, you could spend your whole life trying to go to the depth of the relationship you could have with God. And that's a well with no bottom. Having a relationship with God is the biggest adventure. I get to go to the other side of the world and help people change their life forever. Outside of a relationship with God, the adventures are nothing compared to that. And the really cool thing is, I get to have those other regular adventures that everybody else has as well. I want to challenge you to always think about Christianity. Why do we do the things we do? Is that in the Bible? Is that what God would want us to do? It's probably pretty obvious that you guys are the next generation of the church. And what if you lose your excitement for God? What happens to the next generation? Think about that. And I believe every generation is responsible for keeping the church moving in the right direction. You know, I study church history a lot. I'm writing a 3-volume, 1,500-page book on church history. And one thing we learned from studying church history is every church movement can lose their way. And so every generation has to keep it in the right path. It's your job. If the church in Indonesia is going to continue to do great things, it's your job. You need to keep it moving in the right direction. You need to think about why we're doing what we're doing. I love adventure. This is climbing in the Scottish Highlands. That was pretty exciting. But it was also exciting teaching to the church in Scotland. This is my 60th birthday. I jumped out of a plane. 4,000 meters in the air. And the plane was working just fine. But I jumped out of it anyway. Why did I do that? Because I love adventure. But my Christian life is a bigger adventure. Sometimes in our faith, we need to jump out of the plane. But those are the exciting times. If you do what everybody else does, how boring. I feel sorry for you. Repentance. That's exciting. Sharing your faith. Do you understand the privilege that we have? You could meet somebody you never met in your life. And through a brief conversation with them, change the direction of their life from total disaster to glory. Even if you did that just once in your life, your life would matter. I'm trying to think of the number of times that's happened to me. A couple of years ago, I was in Hong Kong. This guy walks up to me. He says, "You never met me." But 27 years ago, you gave a presentation at UC San Diego. He said, "I was an atheist. And so was my roommate. But he said, let's go to that thing so we can mess that guy up. Let's go to the thing so we can give him a hard time." And he went. And he came to believe in God. And I meet him 27 years later. A faithful Christian. I don't know, to me Christianity is exciting. My son and I went to the place in Cambodia where they shot the Indiana Jones movie. And my daughters and I, we go on a safari in Africa. But you know what? We didn't just go on a safari in Africa. We went on a spiritual safari in Africa to encourage the church there. It's when that kind of a regular human adventure anybody could have combines with the spiritual adventure, and it kind of work together. I want you to have a vision for your spiritual adventure. Where's God going to take you? I'll tell you, it's better than what you can imagine. My daughter Kate, we're at the Taj Mahal for her 16th birthday. Now that's an adventure. My wife is about to lose her stomach or something like that. That's Half Dome. 2,000 feet straight down. Are you ready for the Christian adventure? Are you going to settle for a boring Christian? Normal Christian. Where you go to church. You read your Bible occasionally. You pray for a few minutes. And then you go on to the rest of your day. Oh, I don't like that kind of Christianity. And then we had a little adventure last summer. Our 30th anniversary. At Machu Picchu. That's exciting. Point number four. Is using your gift. You know, we're not saved by works. You don't have to do a bunch of stuff to go to heaven. In fact, nothing you do could take you to heaven. I want to give you a little bit of vision of how you can link with God. One way to become linked with God is to use the gift that He has given you. To serve. Let's read 1 Peter chapter 4. Verses 10 through 12. Yeah.
Layanilah seorang akan yang lain. Sesuai dengan karunia yang telah diperoleh tiap-tiap orang sebagai pengurus yang baik dari kasih karunia Allah. Jika ada orang yang berbicara, baiklah yang berbicara sebagai orang yang menyampaikan firman. Jika ada orang yang melayani, baiklah yang melakukannya dengan kekuatan yang dianugerahkan Allah. Supaya Allah dimuliakan dalam segala sesuatu karena Yesus Kristus. Ialah yang punya kemuliaan dan kuasa sampai selama-lamanya. Amin. Saudara-saudara kasih,
Sorry, that's enough. Sorry, my fault. I have a question. How many of have a gift? A gift specific to you that God gave you. How many of you? You know, God does not make junk. You all have a gift. Now, people my age, generally, we figured out what our gift is. People my age, we figured out what our gift is. We were talking to a sister on the way up here. Whose gift is helping children with special needs. So what she decided to do is to make that her career.
Dan itu menjadikan satu karir dia.
And to use it to glorify God.
Dan menggunakan itu untuk memuliakan Tuhan.
Do you think that will open opportunities to her to serve God?
Menurut kamu itu akan memberikan kesempatan enggak untuk dia bisa melayani Tuhan?
I think it will. God says, whatever gift you have, use it with all your energy. Now, if you're young, you may not know what your gift is. I'd say in high school, maybe half, maybe even less than half know what their gift is. Let me tell you what your gift is. It's the thing you love to do. It's the thing you dream about doing. Now be careful. Some people say their gift is singing. But actually they can't sing very well. So you might want to get some advice. Let's say your gift is fixing cars. Anybody have that as their gift? You know, that's a pretty good gift. And I say you're going to start the car fixing ministry. I'm serious. You're going to invite people if you have a free car fixing clinic. Every Saturday, come over here, I'll fix your car for free. Because you love fixing cars. You'll get 10 people to church. In the next 5 years, you'll help several people become a Christian because you love fixing cars. And because you love fixing cars, you fix cars for Jesus. 10 years from now, now we gotta think big. Because God gave you a gift. And He's planning on doing great things through that thing. Oh, 10 years from now, there's going to be a car fixing ministry in Surabaya and New Delhi and LA. And 20 years from now, they're going to hold the ICOC Car Fixing Ministry Conference. Right here in Jakarta. And you're going to be the main speaker. You know, I'm being funny there. But I'm serious. You know, I like to think that my gift is teaching. I love to teach. You know, I'm not paid a salary to come here. This is my vacation. What a better way to spend my vacation than traveling 10,000 miles to teach some teenagers, to inspire them in their relationship with God. Now, one of my favorite movies, this movie was when your parents were children. But I bet a few of you have seen it. It's Chariots of Fire. Yeah, it's about this athlete. He's so old, he remembers. Da 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 da. My gift is not singing. All right, but anyway, there's a line in the movie. where he says, when I run,
ketika saya berlari,
I feel God's pleasure.
Saya merasa sesuatu spesial.
For me, when I teach,
untuk saya, ketika saya mengajar,
I feel God's pleasure.
Saya merasa sesuatu spesial.
So what's your gift?
Jadi, apa?
One of my wife's gifts is organizing events. So a husband whose gift is teaching,
di mana suaminya talentanya mengajar,
a wife whose gift is organizing events,
di mana istrinya talentanya adalah mengatur acara.
So what do we do together?
Jadi apa yang kita lakukan sama-sama?
We organize teaching events.
Jadi kita mengatur acara pengajaran.
You should see Jan. She gets all stressed and all worried. But when that event comes off, and people are encouraged, then she feels the pleasure of the Lord. That picture is my daughter and I teaching in Lagos. Teaching the teens in Lagos. That gets me fired up, man. I'm telling you. You know, whatever your gift is, like this passage says, you need to use it to serve. If it's in Uganda, or in Mexico, or in Philippines, or in Ghana in West Africa, or in Guinea in West Africa, or a church planting in India, or helping children in El Salvador, or helping to teach at a school in Guatemala. Those are just a few opportunities I've had. Why? Because I love God with all my mind. And because I have a sense of Christian adventure. And because I'm using my gift to serve God and serve other people. Oh, and I forgot, Bogota, Colombia. My last point, and then I'm going to take some questions. Need to have a plan. And the plan depends on your gift. That can be confusing to a teenager who doesn't know what their gift is. So let me make a suggestion. Do all kinds of stuff. Take lots of different classes. Volunteer for this thing. Volunteer for some event. Try a sport. Read a book. Fix a car. Until you find your passion. But once you find your passion, develop it. Get training. Study books. And dream. Because God has a great Christian adventure for you. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. But I know Christianity is exciting. And the key is being linked with God. Alright, so I just take questions. I happen to be a science professor. Maybe I have a Bible question. A doubt you have. If you go to my website, almost 2,000 questions that I've answered.
Ada sekitar 2,000 pertanyaan yang ditanyakan kepada saya.
Well, let's do one face to face right now. Let's do one face to face right now.
Go ahead. So you told us to have like an expectation and vision in our Christian life, like to see where it can lead us in the future. But I think like in my Christian life, like a lot of times when I say a lot of times when I stagnate in my Christian life, it's because the vision seems too far to be reached. It seems too big. Is there something you've been telling me?
Jadi ketika saya lagi bergumul dalam keputusan saya, sepertinya segala sesuatu jauh terlalu sulit saya lakukan.
No, that's a good question. Here's my advice.
Ini saran saya.
You need to have a short-term goal.
Kamu perlu punya rencana jangka pendek.
A medium-term goal.
Jangka menengah.
And a long-term goal.
Dan jangka panjang.
And the short-term goal is the one you're working on right now. Let's say your gift is maybe serving the poor. Then related to that, you need to have a short-term goal, a medium-term goal, and a long-term goal. And if all you have is the long-term goal, you can get lost. You get a sense that I'll never get there. That's normal. But if you have all three in your mind, that helps me to keep focused. For example, a short-term goal for the last 2 days was for me to prepare for this class. And last night I was up late thinking about it. And this morning I woke up early, I was thinking about it. And then we have a medium term goal. Right now I'm writing a book. Now that's about a 3-year project. I think that's too long for a medium-term goal for most of you. A medium-term goal is what you're trying to do this semester. For me, it might be trying to really understand in depth the book of Ezekiel. If your gift is helping the needs of the poor, your medium-term goal might be to set up a program. At your school or something like that. But then you have the big program. I'm sorry, the big goal. That's the vision. That's your vision. That's me 20 years ago. Just imagining. Imagining what God could do. That's the goal that gives you the deepest motivation. For all of us, we have the same long-term goal, which is to go to heaven, right? And the long-term goal is what gives you that feeling like your life has purpose. But we also need a short-term goal. Today, this week. A medium-term goal. The next month, the next 4 months. and a long-term goal. Maybe the next 5 or 10 years. A Bible question, a science question. Okay.
Pretty early in your lesson today, you said one of the ways to make your Christian life more interesting and for you to be more excited about learning Bible is to really look into the Bible and like look at the verses and try to get everything from that verse, right? But like,
pertama-tama, waktu tadi kamu bicara, hal yang membuat kamu semangat dan hidup adalah bisa menggali firman lebih dalam.
And you said like, if you can get help from like, you know, pastors and other teachers, but like, sometimes you can't really just study it by yourself. But how do you really know like, your interpretation is like, is it correct interpretation?
Untuk kamu pelajari, bagaimana kamu benar-benar tahu bahwa penerjemahan kamu benar kepada
Tuhan? Great question. There's a really long, fancy name for this. It's a word, a very, very long, fancy word. It's called hermeneutics. Yeah, it's like the scientific study of how to interpret the Bible. And to me, anybody who wants to understand the Bible should study how to interpret the Bible. Now you can go to my website, type in the word hermeneutics, although you have to figure out how to spell it first. And I've got like a 10-hour class on that topic. And 40 or 50 pages of notes. 40 or 50 pages of notes. Rules like how to know the context. I'm going to be teaching from the book of Revelation tomorrow. In Revelation, the rule is interpret it symbolically unless the context says to take it literally.
Kamu harus menerjemahkan secara simbolis kecuali itu dijelaskan secara langsung.
When I study the book of Acts,
ketika saya pelajari buku Kisah,
I take it literally
dan saya mengambil itu secara langsung
unless the context says to take it symbolically.
Kecuali dikatakan saya harus mengambil secara simbolis.
There's rules about how to interpret grammar in the Bible. I'm sure grammar is very exciting for you guys. But sometimes you have to put in a little work. I believe generally the Bible is not that hard to interpret. But we have to learn a few rules. And if you ever get stuck, send me a question. And I won't just give you the answer. I'll use the scriptures to tell you the answer. Another thing is, if have you ever read like a Bible commentary? For example, I just finished teaching a class on Matthew. And I got 2 or 3 books this thick about Matthew. Let's say I'm trying to interpret Matthew 16, verse 10. That book would give me 3 alternatives. And then I can read them and think about which makes more sense. You know, if you need wisdom, in James chapter 3 it says, pray about it. You could also pray for wisdom. And just develop your brain. Take a physics class. You know, learn to think deeply. You know, learn to think. That's part of it. Okay, next. Okay.
Alright, so you talk about making short-term goals, medium-term goals, long-term goals, but what if, you know, the environment, the society that we are being put into is against our personal goals?
So what if the society is against Christianity?
If it's against your personal goal, people around you against your personal goal.
Yeah.
What if the people around you, it's against your personal goal?
So what if... What if the people around you are not supporting what you're trying to do? I think I understood the question. Can I just answer it? So you're asking, what if the people around you are not supporting what you believe? Yeah. I would say, read the book of Matthew. That describes Jesus, exactly. Another book to read would be the book of Acts. Paul went into the city of Athens, where everybody thought completely different than Christianity. Read Acts chapter 17. You see how he interacted with people that didn't disagree with him. He began by respecting them. Not by laughing at them, by finding common ground, by finding things that they could agree with. And then showing a better way. What you describe is the situation where I work. I work around a lot of atheists. And almost nobody respects God. I say, that's exactly where we should be. So I try to shine the light there. On campus, I'm like the Christian professor. One of my colleagues in the biology department, he's a homosexual atheist. But when he has students ask spiritual questions, he says, go talk to Dr. Oaks. So I think we need to be bold, but not foolish. We need to treat people with respect, kindness, try to find common ground. But you know, a lot of people won't listen. That's just the way it is. So find the ones who will. I believe in any situation, you'll find somebody you could reach out to. If not, move somewhere else. How about a science question? How about a Bible question? All right. Wait a minute. This side of the room needs to get a chance, don't you think? No. One more. But then we pass it over there. Okay.
So basically, I'm talking about the goals, right? When you're looking for something you're good at, right?
Yeah.
When you're looking for something you're good at, and
when you put that problem, kamu bisa tahu.
Yeah, and when you found it and you know you're good at it, you know you like it, but you can't achieve it.
Tapi kamu bisa apa?
You can't improve it. Gak bisa improve.
Gak bisa diperbaiki. You can't improve that.
You can't improve that. So, is it should we move on to it or like we should keep it?
Well, what you just said, in a sense, is a contradiction. Because you said you found your gift, but you found out you're not any good at it. Yeah, you liked it. Again, that's a good question. Like I said, for young people, what you just described is very common. For older people, that's not normal. But for young people, it's very common. They get really excited about something, and they find out they're not even good at it. That's why I gave you that advice. Remember the advice I gave you? When you're young, try a lot of things. Read up on many different subjects. Try a lot of different activities. Don't get too focused on one thing when you're young. I think that's a good advice, even if you think you know what your gift is. It's when you get well into your 20s and your 30s, then I think it's a better time to focus in on that gift. I figured out that my gift was teaching. About the middle of my 20s. But let's say you think your gift is teaching, so you volunteer at a class somewhere, and the kids don't even pay attention to you, and you're all intimidated. I say that's probably not your gift. But that's the exciting part about being young. You're still discovering who you are. But it can feel a little bit like, you're confusing. I'm trying to give you a vision for the future. For me, when I was 30, I could really map out what that future was going to be a little bit, you know? When you're younger, that picture is more vague. But let me tell you this. All of you have a gift. An amazing gift. That could help hundreds, literally hundreds of people. So that's part of the adventure. Is finding that gift. So you jump out of a plane. And you climb that cliff. You read that book. You try that sport. Okay. Next. We need a female. Female on this side of female. You're not female. A female on this side of the room. Oh, good. Okay. Which came first, the chicken or the egg? The chicken came first. Because it laid an egg. Now, were you being facetious or did you really want to know? Okay. So let me give a scientific answer. So let's talk about genetics. And let's talk about evolution. Some Christians don't like to talk about evolution. Because they think evolution is the tool of the atheists. I don't agree with that at all. Guess who invented evolution? God invented evolution. And if God invented something, it's a good thing. Now, scientifically, yeah, God invented evolution. What did he say? Tuhan, the Lord. Yeah. Okay. So scientifically, you know, there's all these genes in something, right? Right? Genes, genetics, you know. So we could say there's no exact distinction between a chicken and not a chicken, right? It's kind of arbitrary. But let's just say that one mutation was the change between not a chicken and a chicken. Well, that mutation would have formed in an egg. So if we have a genetic change that made the first chicken, it would be the egg. So the answer is the egg came before the chicken. But getting back to a real question, evolution is God's means to create change over time. Evolution is God's way of creating change over time. Because the earth changes over time, and species have to change over time to react to that. So God created a natural mechanism for species to change over time. The Bible doesn't talk about evolution. What would God have said? Maybe in Genesis chapter 1. God would say, you know, there's chromosomes and DNA and mitosis and meiosis. So God doesn't describe evolution in the Bible. But I say it's God's invention. The egg came first. Sort of. Okay. We had another sister that had a question. Okay. Okay.
So if the devil knows he's going to lose in the end. Why keep trying? Like, he knows God. He knows God better than us. He was an angel before. But why does he keep on trying, like, so hard to get all the people when he knows he's going to lose in the end?
Kalau iblis tahu bahwa akhirnya dia kalah, kenapa dia terus-menerus mencoba untuk melawan Tuhan?
Now you're assuming
kamu berasumsi
that the devil knows he's going to lose.
Bahwa iblis akan kalah padanya.
How do you know that? I don't know that. That's a good question. I mean, atheists, they know they're going to die. And you're, if an atheist, when you die, you're dead like a dog. You're dead like a dog. And there's no purpose to life. There's no purpose to life. There's no meaning to life. They know they're going to keep, they're going to lose. So why don't they commit suicide? I don't know, ask an atheist. I do think there's like a physical explanation to that. Human beings, just like all animals, it's written into our nature to resist death. If an animal is about to die, they really go crazy, right? So I think God put it in us to have a certain fear of death and of life coming to an end. And even evil people have a sense that there has to be something. So I think it's something that God put in us. That we think we have to do something, we have to accomplish something. So Satan's like that, I guess. Maybe he doesn't stop and think about it. I remember once I was renting a room from a lady who's an atheist. She was a doctor. She said, "I hate vacations. I hate vacations. Because when I have a vacation, I have to stop being busy and I think about my life and I realize how meaningless it is and I get depressed. So that's why I like to keep busy." That's not logical, is it? But she's just being honest. So I think Satan is like that. He tells himself a lie. Satan is a liar, right? And maybe he lies to himself. And he tells himself it's worth it. But I'm guessing. It's hard to exaggerate how stupid people can be. I'm serious. You've seen it. Think of the guy who falls madly in love. With a girl who couldn't care less about him. And they just don't get it. You know, we think we're pretty smart. But I think when it comes to a battle between our emotions and our mind, our emotions win almost every single time. Now, I never met the guy, Satan. I never met him personally, so I can't speak for him. But I know even Christians behave very stupidly sometimes. So imagine how stupid non-Christians behave sometimes. And I say that, I'm serious. Okay. Okay.
I once read on a magazine about research of neurophysics for the brain. It is said that brainwave on our brain, when they chirp, it looks like harmonic language, it looks like language in the world. And when they translate it, it looks like the scriptures. So, yeah, I have a theory that maybe our brain is like a supercomputer in God invents, and you can upgrade it like what you need to do with. And maybe like that time that John and Jacob say to Jesus that, do you want us to burn Samaria to the ground with rain of fire? And Samaria reject Jesus and he's going to be Jerusalem. So I think maybe Jesus is upgrading the brain of the disciples.
Okay, do you want to translate that?
I am lost.
Pada dasarnya dia berbicara tentang pernah membaca salah satu kitab tentang
jadi saya pernah membaca di satu majalah bahwa brainwave itu pasti itu layak waktu itu seperti itu bisa menarik bahasa pertama dunia dan pas baca aku kayak ayat-ayat kita untuk kita Tuhan gitu. Jadi punya teori bahwa waktu itu adalah superkomputer di mana bisa diambil. Dan mungkin kita itu bisa bersumpah seperti Yakobus dan Yohanes bilang, Tuhan apakah kau mau kami menjadi kota Samaria dengan hujan api saat Samaria melalui Tuhan dan di Yerusalem kayak itu dan akhirnya Yesus malah bilang kayak itu untuk mereka dan seperti itu dimana akhirnya Tuhan apa yang bisa terpaksa di mana itu untuk menjelaskan.
Yeah, I understand the question. And it sounds like a funny question. And it is funny, partly, but I think it's actually a good question. See, neuroscientists, scientists who study the brain, neuroscientistas or something. You know, there are many branches of science. In physics, most physicists I've known have some kind of belief in God, believe it or not. For chemists, maybe almost half. For biologists, maybe one third or one fourth. But neuroscience, it's the most atheist of all the sciences. And they like to believe that the brain is like a computer. It's like a machine. By coincidence, 2 weeks ago tomorrow, at our conference in Nebraska, we had a physicist who's a Christian and a neuroscientist, and he talked on this exact topic. And he argued that the brain is definitely not simply a machine. And that we have a soul. And we have a spirit. Now there are aspects of the brain that are machine-like. There are mechanisms in the brain. When you experience something, it creates neural connections. But we are not simply a machine. Let me ask the group a question. Two options. Option number one. I am a body. Option number two. I have a body. Which is it? I have a body. So if you have a body, then that question doesn't really make sense. I don't mean you don't make sense. I mean, the answer is no. We can't be like downloaded. Because we have a soul. And we have a spirit. And we have free will. And there's not a neural network for free will. It's something that exists outside of our brain. Because when I die, and my brain turns to soup in my head, I will still exist. So my answer is no. I still have energy, okay. We had another sister raise her hand. I saw another sister raise her hand. There we go. Okay. Why did the dinosaur never mention dinosaurs? Oh, that's an easy question. Please, give me a harder question. Two reasons. They didn't exist when Adam and Eve were created. Dinosaurs disappeared 65 million years ago. And when Adam and Eve were created, there were no dinosaurs. So why would God talk about something that the Jews knew nothing about? So let me ask you a question. In Genesis chapter 1, why didn't he mention the internet? Why didn't he mention the internet? Because they knew nothing about the internet. Reason number two, he didn't mention dinosaurs. They didn't even have a word for dinosaurs. Why didn't he mention bacteria? What was he going to say? There's these little tiny creatures. They're so small, you can't see them unless you have a microscope. Oh, I forgot. You don't know what a microscope is. It makes no sense at all that God would mention dinosaurs in the Bible. That's why he does it. But that was a fun question. I like that question. Okay.
Oh, thank you, thank you. So first, I know that you're a Christian apologist, right?
Apologist.
Yeah. And so I know you've written a lot of books to prove like Christianity, but maybe I just want to ask like one significant scientific reason that proves that Christianity exists and what they've been talking about in the Bible is real. Because sometimes I think, you know, how they mention it, we need something, we need faith to understand, like, you know, resurrection and stuff. But we also want like a logical reason and about, you know, some things that have been happening.
So
one significant scientific proof that what happened in the Bible is real.
Dia berkata bahwa kadang-kadang dibutuhkan teman untuk kita mempercayai kita, atau kita juga lebih secara logikanya, secara punya apa untuk bisa mendukung saya seperti itu.
Alex,
yes.
What time is dinner?
7.
7? All right. Because I could give a presentation about science and God.
Saya bisa kasih tahu kamu presentasi tentang science dan Tuhan.
Oh, actually, I gave that presentation on Friday night in Surabaya. And it's even in Bahasa. So go to my website. I talk about that in that talk. But let me give you a few reasons. One reason I believe in God is because the universe exists and because it was created. How do I know the universe exists? How do I know the universe exists? I look around, it exists. How do I know it's created? Because the scientific evidence says it was created. In Hebrews 11, verse 3, it says, by faith, we know that the things that are seen were created from things that are unseen. Now, 2,000 years ago, we knew that by faith. Only because the Bible said so. The Hindus didn't say that. The Greeks didn't say that. All other cultures and religions says the earth was made out of stuff that already existed. Only the Bible said that the things that are seen were made from things that are unseen. And 2,000 years ago, we believed that by faith. But not anymore. Science tells us that the universe was created out of nothing. You look like a smart guy. You've heard of the Big Bang Theory, right? Yeah, science tells us the universe was created out of nothing. Science cannot explain why the universe exists. There is no scientific explanation for the universe existing. The Bible explained it 2,000 years ago, and it agrees exactly with what the Bible says and science. Now I've had an hour. I would give you about 25 more reasons. Let me tell you a story. A few years ago, I was in a van with a bunch of science professors. We were going to an event. And one of the professors said, Christianity. What a stupid religion. She said, in the Bible, it says if you wear clothing with more than one material, like say cotton or linen or something like that, like cotton and linen, whatever, doesn't matter. Capital punishment. So what a stupid religion. How could anybody believe in that religion? So I said, excuse me, but the Bible doesn't say that. She said, yes it does. I read it at a website. So I said, you know, a lot of people say the Bible is full of all kinds of scientific errors. But I've read it through, oh, at least half a dozen times. I haven't found a single science error in there yet. I don't know what they're talking about. See, people say this stuff, but they don't know what they're talking about. And then I opened my Bible. Now, you got to know your Bible pretty well on this one. How many of you could find the verse in Leviticus that talks about clothing with more than one material? With eight scientists staring at you. So I said a quick prayer. I knew it was on the right hand side of the page. Halfway down. And I read the passage. And of course they had nothing to say. I say of all human beings, the one with the worst excuse for not believing in God is the scientist. But then I could talk more about specifically the Bible and science. But I think we should go on to the next question. I want to have close to 50-50, girls and boys. Sorry, I'm favoring the women because, you know. Okay.
When you die already. Oh, he said God's gonna resurrect our body. If we die now, where is our body? You say that is that true? When someone is, already died, they actually the spirit is everywhere like those.
Okay, good question. I can tell we're losing people's attention a little bit, which is natural. So maybe we'll make this the last question, okay? Let me answer that question. You actually asked at least three different questions, I think. You asked the question, what kind of body will we have in the resurrection? You also asked, what happens to our bodies when we die? And you also asked, where do we go between when we die and the final resurrection? So that's a few different questions. First of all, when we die, our body rots. 1,000 years from now, maybe a few bones. And of course, in Ezekiel 37, you got the parable about the bones. But the body we'll have in the final resurrection, it's a different kind of body. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, in verse 42, it says, the body that dies is perishable. That means it doesn't last. But the body that is raised is an immortal body. It won't be a body like this. I honestly don't know what it will be like. But the molecules that compose your body right now, those will not be what forms your new body. Let me be honest with you. When I was first a Christian, I thought, I don't want them to cremate me. Because then what would happen in the resurrection? But now I realize that's really just superstition. So the molecules in my body, they'll go somewhere else. Maybe one of the water molecules in my body will end up in a tree in China somewhere. I don't know. But we will be raised from the dead. We'll be given a new kind of body, not like the one we have today. Now, where do we go when we die? The Bible uses the word Hades. H-A-D-E-S. Hades or something. It's in the Bible. Okay, Hades is the place we go when we die. Will this body go with us to Hades? Obviously not. The Bible describes Hades as a place of waiting. It seems that there's a good and a bad place even in Hades. In the Old Testament, the good place is called Sheol, and the bad place is called Abaddon. In the New Testament, the good place is called paradise. And the bad place is called torment.
Okay.
It's called torment. And to make it even more confusing, in 1 Peter chapter 3, Verse 20, it says that Jesus went and preached there. What would that sermon be about? I have no idea. I know virtually nothing about Hades. And the reason I know almost nothing about it is because the Bible says almost nothing about it. And why does the Bible say almost nothing about it? Because God doesn't want us to worry about it. So I say, we should get ready to die. So that after we die, we go to the good place. And at the end of time, we go to heaven. That's good enough for me. That's all I need to know. Jesus said, in my Father's house, there are many rooms. And he said, I'm going there to prepare a place for you. And he said, I'm going to come back and I'm going to take you there. That's good enough for me. But I also am curious about that. Okay, we've been going for a long time. I think it's time to take a break. Thank you very much.
For coming a long way to join us. Your lesson has personally helped me, and I'm sure a lot of you